This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Bob Mata joining us, defense attorney and host of Defense Diaries. We're going to talk about Brian Koberger here and the giant list of companies that have received warrants on them for information regarding the intersection of Brian Koberger and them in some way, shape, or form, oftentimes just purchases, but purchases that are going to tell us a lot about what was going on in the mind of Brian Koberger. Bob, let's start there. What's your thoughts on that huge list of companies?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the ones that you're looking at, I mean, you can kind of, you know, read through the tea leaves a little bit there with respect to what they were looking for. Obviously, with the K-Bar warrants, they're looking for anybody that may have purchased the knife. Same with Amazon. They're looking, I think, probably specifically for the knife with respect to K-Bar, obviously, but Amazon and eBay as well. Those would be probably the three places that somebody would go to buy the knife. Walmart's another possibility. I don't know if they carry that particular brand. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, they're leaving no stone unturned, which I fully expected that they would. You know, the question is was Koberger stupid enough to have used his own debit card? You know what I'm saying? Did he purchase it online? You know, obviously with this, we know what the DoorDash is, that clearly was trying to get the information of who the driver was, what they were driving, what they may have seen.
Sure.
You know, they wanted his contact information so they could contact him to see, hey, did you see this white Elantra driving around? As far as the socials, we know what they're getting at. There's that, I keep reading about this Papa Roger thing that, you know, it's smoke, man. I'm not going to call it fire yet, but it definitely reads weird, you know, and like if you read about it online and kind of, there's a lot of differing opinions on it. In terms of whether or not it was him, but they're absolutely looking into that along with everything else that possibly may have gone on with respect to his socials. You know, People Magazine or whoever it was, you know, dropped the story that they, or it might have been Newsweek or both of them, you know, that he had a bunch of pictures of the girls in his, I don't know if it was his Instagram or his Snapchat, one of the two. I think it was his Instagram, but you know, I mean, those are all the things that they're looking for. None of them are necessarily indicia in terms of the social media side, other than maybe to show, you know, that they were targets, that, you know, these are clearly people that he was looking at. And you know, by way of that, we're going to assume that, you know, that was part of the process for him in terms of what he was planning to ultimately do. You know, the knife is a whole different story. You know, I am sure as far as in those warrants were not a surprise. I mean, any law enforcement agency is going to send out everything to everywhere. And, you know, the one thing that I didn't see, I would have liked to have seen warrants for all the auto zones, any type of like automotive type place where you could buy car mats, because car mats are a huge indicator, because when he walked out of there, there had to have been blood in the soles of his shoes, and the car mats would have been something that he would have bought. Now, we know he was in Colorado. We know that they took a kind of a circuitous route when they were driving back to Pennsylvania. You know, like, I'm assuming that I'm going to see warrants for those, because like if he goes and put, because you can't get, you're not going to be able to get all the blood out of, because if it was up in the treads of the shoes,
sure,
and as he's driving and it seeps into the car mats, he's going to need to get new car mats, because he knows, being a you know, trying to get his PhD in criminology, that you're not going to be able to get rid of that evidence in total, no matter how much you clean it. So like that would be something that he would have bought. And I expect that we'll see that there are warrants to every place that, you know, and it's, they know where his locations were, you know what I mean? They have them pinged all over the place. So it's not going to be a mystery. It's not like as much of a needle in the haystack situation as it might otherwise be because of the GPS tracking and that data. So like I'm anticipating that anywhere, O'Reilly's, you know, AutoZone, all those different places where you can buy car mats that will fit, that they're searching for that too, because that's all indicia of the crime. You know, it's all indicia of him trying to cover his tracks. You know, I'm assuming also that aside from warrants, that they're checking every rest stop in between, you know, Idaho in terms of where the campus was, and Pullman, everything that, you know, in terms of rest stops on the way down to Colorado, even with these, with his father, mm-hmm. you know, it's not beyond the scope of reason that he had, you know, some of, or at least some of the indicia of crime with him and dispose of it on the road trip. Mm-hmm. You know, his father's not digging through his bags, you know? And at that point, like, I mean, he had a lot of time to cover his tracks. And I'm imagining that he did it in the best way possible, especially in light of the fact that if he's the guy, he knows he left that sheath there. So there cannot exist anything else forensically in order for him to try to overcome that at trial. Cause like if that DNA comes back, we know it's single source. We don't know the quality of the DNA. Mm-hmm. I know people like to just jump to the conclusion that it's like, bing, it's a man. Well, you know, there's going to be an expert on the other side that's going to evaluate the DNA, and it could be a partial profile. It could be a full, we don't know yet. Mm-hmm. Like those are all questions that'll come at trial. But I can guarantee you that they'll have their own DNA expert who will be evaluating that DNA and attacking it, you know? So, you know, we know for a fact that Coburg had enough time to try to really, really be thorough in covering everything that he needed to cover in order to make sure that they couldn't find anything on him. So, cause I don't think they're going to get much from any of the searches of his apartment. You know, I mean, there was possible hairs, but I mean, we'll see how it plays out. He just had a lot of time, you know, and that image of him sitting in his kitchen table, you know, with t-shirt and shorts on with rubber gloves, like bagging garbage.
That's weird to me. Like what on earth is he doing? What was that scene of him bagging garbage with rubber gloves on?
I think what he was like at that point, he is smart enough to know. He got pulled over twice in Indiana alone mm-hmm. with his father in the car on basically BS reasons, like following too close is like number one, we're pulling you over for a different reason. Mm-hmm. So like he's smart enough. He had to know at that point that they were on to him. Okay. Like this was not like a big mystery to him anymore. He could sense that they were closing in and like that, those two pullovers in one state on that drive sent up the red flags in his mind. I honestly think that he was trying to make it so that anything he touched wasn't going to be recoverable in the garbage. Mm-hmm. Just anticipating that they were going to be searching, you know, and that their parents were, because my question was, were his parents awake? That was the one thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, are we talking about some parents that are complicit here and are harboring a fugitive from justice mm-hmm. or, you know, aiding and abetting? But depending on what time they did the search warrant, I think it was a very early morning hours. You know, I'm hoping that the folks were still sleeping and weren't a party to what potentially has been going on.
What do you think his next move would have been had he not been arrested? And I think it's interesting to speak to we were just talking about the gloves, the almost hiding that he was even at his parents' house is almost what it looks like. I mean, you can't fully do that, but I guess in his mind, his paranoia was like, well, reduce the odds by any way you possibly can.
Exactly.
I'm wondering, was he planning to flee and go into hiding after this somewhere else or still stay in plain sight?
I don't think so, man. I think it was stay the course.
Yeah.
You know, I think if he would have, you know, because I mean, he was obviously going home for break. You know, they were on winter break at that point, you know, so like that was a natural break in his coursework. I think he was going to go, you know, he figured he survived that first month.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, like he survived it at least in terms of him not being aware that they were onto him, because I'm telling you, as soon as the trip takes place across country, he's aware that the jig is up. You know what I mean? Like no one's getting pulled over twice in one state. I don't know if you travel by car.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very rare. I'm an old man and I've never been put, and I speed horribly, and I've never been pulled over twice in one state.
Yeah.
You know, so, and you have to imagine if he's the guy, what's constantly going through his mind, mm-hmm. right? I mean, like he's a guy he's on super high alert. It's not like you and I just driving and like, oh man, I got nailed, got pulled over speed. This is a guy who's acutely aware of everything that's going on. He's acutely aware of what's going on online. He's reading the articles. He's just like just gobbling up the same content that we all were.
Yeah.
You know, he had the exact same information that we had, which is what made the way that Moscow and the feds and, you know, everybody or Moscow and everybody that handled it, you know, brilliant, like mm-hmm. as much heat as they were taking, as much flack as they were getting, they just would not cave. They would not, you know, like, can you imagine being those cops and those
feds?
You know, like hearing all this garbage being talked and then like the whole way knowing all the things that you're doing and how close you are mm-hmm. and just how rewarding that felt in order for them to have made that arrest, you know? So it's like, you've got all that going on in his mind where he knows what's happening, mm-hmm. you know, he knows, but he doesn't, you know, it's like, it's a game of cat and mouse between law enforcement and him, but he doesn't know that they're on to him and they do. Until he does, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? It's like at some point, because of his acute awareness, he realizes that they were onto him. So I think that, you know, had he survived that period at home without being arrested, I think he would have gone back to Pullman, man. I think he would have tried to just stay the course, you know, like, cause if he vanishes, it's suspect. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like
yeah.
If he does anything that's out of the ordinary, it's suspect. It makes him look like, you know, if he flees, well, yeah, there you go. It's, you know, it's not a good look. So in terms of, you know, it's a consciousness of guilt argument that is what they'll always argue if somebody flees, you know,
sure.
that he left. So I think had he not been arrested in Pennsylvania, I think that he would have stayed home until the break was over, drove back out. You know, because it's not unusual that he drove the car. He wanted to be able sure. to like, theoretically be able to drive around on the break. His dad flying out is not unusual. It's a very long drive. You don't want to take that drive alone. So like all that like kind of chatter about that being strange, I didn't think was strange at all. As a matter of fact, I thought it was the opposite. I thought it was normal.
Yeah.
You know, I think his father probably would have driven him back and flew home, you know, I think. I don't know.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Bob Mata, defense attorney and host of Defense Diaries, another podcast. And like I said, just a kick-ass defense attorney, as I've said on the other episodes. Always a pleasure to have you on and give your insight onto this case. We got more to talk about with Bob and Brian Koberger. We're going to go into some of the psychology of it, of did Brian essentially view this as, you know, the Disney ride from hell and signed up for a fast pass and got on the ride and he's still riding it and we're just all on the sidelines being viewed as he goes on his journey that could very easily end up with a bullet in his head through a firing squad? Is that the out gate for him on this? Press subscribe so you don't miss that conversation. Wherever you download podcasts, get an ad-free experience through Apple Podcasts. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.